Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me is Yanis Janaeus. In this special episode, we'll be talking to gentleman Jim McGillion and Jamie Reed, who are the broadcasting team of Fulham FC TV. I look forward to speaking to both of them, but before I do anything, I have to welcome them both to the show. Guys, thank you so much for joining me. First, I want to welcome Mr. McGillion to the show. Jim, thank you so much for joining us to talk a little bit about you and Jamie today.
Yeah, my pleasure, Russ. Nice to talk to you.
I look forward to talking to you, but I also look forward to talking to Jamie. Jamie, thank you so much for joining Yanis and I today.
Russ, lovely to get the opportunity to catch up with you.
Okay, well, listen, we have a good amount to get through in this period of time to talk with you. And Jim, I want to start with you. Actually, a friend of mine just contacted me and wanted to get this answer, so I thought I would start the show this way with you. How far back does it go with you basically doing commentating on Fulham? When did it begin? I mean, I started to become a Fulham supporter listening to you, but when did it actually begin for you, if you could tell us?
I couldn't tell you for exactly, Russ. I mean, as far as the internet commentary goes, it goes back to the championship winning season under Paul Thorpe. We started to do live commentaries via the internet. Prior to that, I'd had a 2 or 3 year break, I suppose, a couple of seasons not doing it. And prior to that, I was doing it on the phone back in the days when most of the clubs were using a thing called Club Call, you know, and it was there was no internet in those days. It was a premium rate phone line service, which initially was based on just updates from the match. You dialed in and just did an update, giving out the scoreline and that kind of thing. And then we actually moved on to doing full live commentary on the phone. And I did that for 2 or 3 seasons. So I suppose it goes back, from my point of view, about 25 years.
Okay, excellent. Jamie, over to you. I want to ask you about your background in football and broadcasting and how you came to Fulham FC TV. This is your second season, so just give us a little background on yourself.
Well, Russ, I've been incredibly fortunate. You're right. It is the second season in which I've been working with Jim, and we've been lucky to hit the ground running. You think back to when it started last season, we had the Newcastle night game, got off to that winning start, and it's been a case of never really looking back. As a journalist, I've been able to cover Fulham. It's been great to come here to the Cottage. And when the opportunity was put in front of me, there was the chance to work with Jim, who's a massive hero, not only to me, but to all Fulham supporters. The chance to get that opportunity to work together, absolutely fantastic. And to watch this great football that's being played by this team, it's a great time to be involved.
Okay, excellent. Jamie, I want to go right back to you. You joined Jim last season, as we're talking about. Talk about those early days of you and Jim working together and the chemistry that you had from the very beginning.
Well, to be honest, it was very fortunate, Russ, because of the way the team was playing, the style that was implemented, adopted. When they went out onto the pitch, they seemed to find their straps straight away, and that made it easy for Jim and I. Obviously, we knew each other, but we didn't know each other particularly well, and we got the chance to work alongside each other. And with the displays that were being put in by the team, I think it just sort of helped us gel, didn't it, Jim?
Yeah, I think so, Jamie. Yeah, it's always a lot easier when the team are playing well and the results are going your way. It makes the commentary and the analysis and everything else that much easier. But, as Jamie said, quite lucky, really, Russ, because we didn't know each other and we'd never worked together, obviously never covered a game until that first one against Newcastle. And, the first whistle went and none of us really knew how it was going to go. But we get on very well and we seem, to complement each other quite nicely. The fans, I think, prefer it and think it's a much improved service, and it's just fortunate really that we get on very well, and so we travel the games together, and now we are very much a double act.
You are, and it actually works great together, because obviously I'm listening in America to your broadcast and I really enjoy them, and like I said, I can hear your chemistry and it works really well. But Jim, I want to go back to you, because we've talked about that you started off by doing the internet radio broadcast, and recently, obviously, Fulham now have the TV component to it. Have you had to change anything to how you broadcast these matches now that you have that element to it, or has it still been about the same? You paint the picture very well, but I'm curious if you've had to change anything.
Not really, Russ. I mean, I did wonder that myself, obviously, when the club announced that they were introducing the live video stream, but from my point of view, I can't really do anything all that differently because, you know, I have to bear in mind that a large percentage of the people tuning in are only listening to the game. They're not seeing it. And on that basis, I have to commentate really for them. Plus, I also think, I notice with a lot of the TV commentators over the years that are alongside us on the gantry, you notice that they tend to commentate watching the monitor, which is not natural to me. I still much prefer to be looking at the picture and looking at the game. And also because I've done an audio-only commentary predominantly, you know, I'm used to describing virtually everything, which, in all honesty, if you were a TV commentator just commentating on a live feed, you wouldn't necessarily do that, obviously, because everyone can see what's going on and you don't need to cover every detail. You don't need to describe every bit of action. You can leave it to play out and they can see it for themselves. But when people can't, obviously you need to be describing where the ball is on the pitch and who's doing what and how far they are from goal and that kind of thing. So I tend to still do that, which adds the slight disadvantage, I guess, that if you are watching the game or when they edit my commentary onto the highlights of the game, maybe I'm doing more talking than you would necessarily need to do for someone who's watching it and can see exactly what's going on. But it's not possible, really, to bear that in mind. At the time, you can only commentate one way or the other, and as I say, I still tend to commentate as if the people can only hear me and they're not watching the game.
I understand that, and you do an excellent job of painting the picture, like I mentioned before, and I appreciate it. All right, Jim, let's talk about last season. I want to get your thoughts about last season, and Jamie as well, but I'm going to start with you. When did you know that last season was going to be special? Was it a moment or was it a match when you thought this could be something for Fulham?
I think probably up at Norwich on Good Friday. I mean, we've been saying for some time, you know, we're trying to keep the faith and we're trying to believe. And we sort of said, as we have done this season, if we can have a good run up towards Christmas and we're not too far away from the top six, you know, we can push on in the new year and we get everyone fit and maybe get some signings and in January. And then we push on again. And then we were looking towards Easter. You know, you have points of the season where you think we've got to be in or around it by then. And obviously we started to put a good run together. It started to grow. The momentum started to grow. But I think probably when the third goal went in at Carrow Road, when Floyd Aiete just, you know, skipped around the keeper and stuck the third one in late on, we'd been 2-0 up. We had a player sent off. We were down to 10 men for the whole of the second half. They got a goal back. There was, if I remember right, there was 7 minutes of stoppage time or something like that. And, you know, it could have gone wrong. But when Floyd put the third one away, you know, it was an emotional day anyway for all of us. And I just thought then, you know, we're going to go and do it. And I have to say, I did believe then that's it. You know, no one's going to stop us now. We're going to make the playoffs. And obviously we did. But I firmly believe we were going to win them as well. So ultimately, you know, that was a bit of a disappointment. But some of the away performances, Newcastle in particular and Huddersfield, you know, taking apart sides that have been at the top of the table all through the season were brilliant. But I think if you're asking for, you know, pinpoint one moment, right, then it was that third goal at Norwich.
That's excellent. For me, it's the Newcastle United away match, but I understand why you went to Norwich City match. Jamie, same question for you.
It was a tremendous performance, wasn't it, up at Newcastle for Ryan Sessegnon to go and do what he did in that game. I guess, Russ, I would take it right back to the start of the season. I know that the team worked really hard on the training ground. They had that stylish pattern of play, and you always knew that when they went out, they were going to impress. And you look at the type of performances that were put in, the great entertainers lives with the side, and you can certainly say that the team lives up to that sort of reckoning. You look at that display against Newcastle United, it was a good display. It got us off to a winning start. I suppose if you're looking at individual performances, Leeds United here, Tom scoring that goal, some of those performances on the road, the 5-0 against Reading, the 5-0 against Huddersfield here, there were many, many defining sort of pivotal points of the season. It was a very, very good season. Ultimately, it ended in disappointment. But I think you've got to think to yourself, we look at what Brighton did and they were able to then back it up the next season and find a way up into the Premier League. And I see no reason why we can't replicate that.
It's funny you say that because I use the Brighton team as a comparison for Fulham. If Brighton can do it, why can't we, Jamie? I'm glad that you mentioned that. All right, guys, I want to talk to you about this season. Expectations were extremely high. Jim, this is for you. But for some reason, first half did not live up to those expectations. Why do you think that was the case? Was it the injury to Kenny, or were there other factors that led the team not to live up to those expectations?
Yeah, I think probably a combination of factors, Russ. I mean, that's the key one. Obviously, you've hit the nail on the head there. You know, any team at championship level would miss Tom Kearney, and particularly when you look at how influential and how important he was to us in the success last season. So that's a large part of it. We've had other players injured as well. You know, Floyd Aiete's had his problems this season. We lost a couple of players. We brought new players in. So I think it's a combination of things. Maybe there's even subconsciously there's some sort of a hangover sometimes, maybe from the disappointment of the playoffs. And it was all just a bit disjointed. You know, we had some, you could look at refereeing decisions, I suppose, in some games. You could look at the fact that we've hit the woodwork more than any other team. There's results that maybe could have, we could have got more points with a little bit more luck. But I think it's a combination of things. But Tom being out for you know, large spells in the first half of the season is probably the most important thing, because as good as we are and as good as the rest of the midfield are, and we've got some top quality there that other teams are very envious of, I know. But I just think, regardless of who's in good form and who's not, who's injured, who's not, who's playing, who's not, you know, we are a better side with Tom Kearney in it than without Tom Kearney in it. And that's been the key thing. So please God, I mean, he got involved this afternoon and seems to have been okay. So if we can keep Tom fit for the rest of this season and keep everybody else fit for the rest of this season, then hopefully we'll do what we did last season. And, you know, the second half will make up for the slow start.
Well, let's hope so, Jim. And Jamie, I want to go right back to you. We are now focusing on this season and the fortunes have changed. We're going to end by talking about, obviously, the massive victory. We are recording this after the huge 6-0 victory. But when did you see the fortunes for Fulham changing? Because we're talking about expectations were high for the first half of the season. We weren't living up to them. But things have changed recently. Has it been a match or a moment where you've seen the turning point?
Well, I think, Ross, it's just been a case of perhaps being able to turn some of the draws into wins. You look at the amount of wins that we've got in recent times. With 3 points for a victory, it sounds such an obvious thing to say, but it's allowed us to push up to where we want to be, just on the verges of the playoffs. And the good thing is the team is playing some good football now, and there's genuine belief that we can push on and get to where we want to be. In terms of performances early season, perhaps, and Tom Kearney mentioned it, Jim mentioned it in commentary today, and I think it's a very valid point. Maybe belief was a little bit of a factor, but you look at those performances, you look at the displays that have been put in recent times, we've managed to pick up those victories, and that's enabled us to push up the table. And the good thing is now, Russ, that there is, you know, strong belief from within this playing group that we can score goals. We're not conceding as many goals as we were, and it's certainly very, very encouraging.
Okay, excellent there, Jamie. All right, I want to bring my co-host into this. Giannis, please feel free to ask our guests some questions here. I know that you have some.
Gentlemen, Jim and Jamie, first thing I want to say, absolute honour to talk to you two. I will, from this side of the Atlantic, I live in Toronto, and first game I went to see was 1972 with my dad. We played Hull, and then I was at the FA Cup final in 75, and I moved here in 91, and I'm an assistant headmaster at a high school, and my office is painted FFC. It has 35 jerseys and a dozen teddy bears. So I get teachers coming in saying, well, how come you don't, you know, how come you don't have any Arsenal or Tottenham? And I usually send them out and say, get lost. There's only one team in London, and that's Fulham. Yeah. I mean, you do incredible stuff, and your commentary is so bang on every game. And I can't say enough good things about you. But I'm going to ask you a question from left field. It's been a bit of a sad week, I think. I was delighted to see that the Premier League today did a tribute to Cyril Regis. And when I think of, obviously, Leroy was senior, Paul Parker, we've had a number of black players play for Fulham. But Cyril Regis really did blaze a trail for black players to come into the game. And I just wanted to get your insight in terms of, you know, the week it's been. I know his funeral's in a week or so. The impact you think that Cyril, even though he never played for Fulham, had on the game and the opportunities for black players to play at the highest level?
Well, he had a tremendous impact, Giannis, I think, you know, and I remember him well, Cyril, as a player. We mentioned him in the game, and obviously there was a minute's applause for him before the game here at the Cottage, and and I would imagine at most of the games around the country, because he has left a legacy, and not only a great player who was so strong and so fast and so fit. You know, I remember him, I said to Jamie, I distinctly remember the yellow and green striped shirts for West Brom, funny enough, as much as the blue and white ones when he must have been playing in cup games. But so dynamic, so strong, and such a good pro, and to tolerate the sort of abuse that was going on in those days, and we refer to it today as the Dark Ages. Thankfully, we've come an awful long way since those times, and there's very, very few people about, thankfully, I think, in football or in society with that sort of nonsense attitude. But yeah, he was a great pro, and it was a real shock during the week to hear that he died. He'd always been super fit, a very strong fella, seemed like a really charming fella, and to see the letter that young Liam Rossini put together, I thought was wonderful, because we know Leroy, we know Leroy reasonably well, and obviously Liam was here, he's a great kid as well, and it obviously means an awful lot to the black players that come through in this current generation. I mean, Liam obviously being an awful lot younger, but he referred to Cyril Regis as his dad's hero, Leroy's hero, which you know, Leroy's had a book out last year, I think it was, you know, and he's addressed those sort of problems that we had in those days. And thankfully, we've moved on a long way. And I think, as I say, it's much as it's a very, very sad time to have lost a player of his quality and a man of Cyril Regis's quality, the legacy that he's left behind, I suppose, is the positive thing that's come out of it. And great career he had, great player, and he made a massive difference in standing up with dignity, as did Brendan Batson at the time and Laurie Cunningham, God rest his soul. But yeah, a very, very difficult scenario for black players in those days, and thankfully, as I say, we've moved on a long way, and Fulham and everybody else, every other football club that I'm aware of, won't entertain that sort of attitude anymore. We're kicking it out of football, and hopefully, you know, it will never return, that sort of attitude. And thankfully, it's largely down to the hard work and the dignity, really, and the class involved in dealing with that situation when it was about. And Cyril Regis certainly was at the forefront of that.
For sure, for sure. Jamie, what do you think?
I fully agree with what Jim said. I mean, it was kick it out day here at Craven Cottage today. There is no place in football for racism or discrimination. And it's lovely to see that all the clubs coming together and certainly saying that it needs to be a thing of the past. Fortunately, by and large, it is. And you have to think back to what Cyril did when he played. And not only when he played, but when he finished, he carried on. And he sort of left a legacy which makes it easier for black players. And that's very, very encouraging. He should be very proud of what he did during his life.
That was wonderful. My final question to you, and it's a personal one, in terms of if a Fulham player, past or present, walked in the door that would make your knees wobbly in terms of the hero he was to the club, who would it be?
That's a tricky one. I mean, well, I've got my all-time favourites, but some of them I've met. It's hard to say, but I've got to be honest, and it's not what a Fulham fan should be saying, but probably Georgie Best for me, just because, growing up as a boy, in my opinion, he's the greatest footballer that's ever lived, and the fact that he played for Fulham at all, obviously he's not steeped in Fulham tradition and Fulham history. It was a cameo role, if you like, but just because I think he's the best footballer that ever lived, I'd probably have to say Bestie, yeah.
I'll keep it up to date, and I think I would have to say one of the current players, because I think we're very fortunate with the stars that we get to see out there on the pitch on a regular basis, and, you know, the performances that are being put in and the displays that we're being able to witness. You look at somebody like Tom Kearney, he plays fantastic football. Long may he be a Fulham player, because he really does have talent in abundance. Ryan Sessegnon, the man's only 17 years of age, but he really is somebody destined for a real bright future. And to sort of make sure that I curry favour with you two guys, I guess we have to mention Tim Ream, because he's been absolutely superb in recent weeks.
Yes,
he has.
He's
brought up a century of appearances, and he's calmness personified. I know that Jim and I have been not only impressed with his performances, but the kind of individual he is off the pitch too, Jim.
Yeah, he's quality. Yeah, absolute class, Tim Ream. And I'm very pleased for him, because it took him a little while to settle in and win the fans over. But yeah, in terms of current form, he's probably player of the season.
Okay.
Excellent. Yeah, he had a terrible, it was terrible in terms of what he suffered through the US being, you know, didn't make the World Cup finals. And I know here at TFC, we've got Michael Bradley and obviously Jose Altidore, who you both know pretty well. And they came back and they won an MLS Cup. But it took Tim Ream a little bit of time to recover from that. He's been absolutely magnificent, though. Yes. And you're right, so far, he looks like the player of the season. My personal thing in terms of the wobbly knees is always going to be Gordon Davis. He was, yeah. I mean, those were the dark days. But this guy, I actually cried when he was transferred to Man City. I was devastated. He was a player who, game in, game out, gave us everything. We had some difficult teams at that time, but I remember the 81-82 with Malcolm McDonald. And, of course, we had, you know, Louis, and we had Ray Houghton and Dean Coney. And now we're going way back. But Gordon Davis is such a canny player and such a quality player and a clever player. And he was always gracious with the fans as well. And he's a player from a bygone era. But I have to agree with you, gentlemen, Jim, about George. But George Bears, that with Rodney Marsh was just one of my bears. Actually, two of my teddy bears are named Rodney and George. George isn't my favourite. My favourite is Ivor, for obvious reasons.
I would have been right there with you, mate. But he blotted his copy book for me. He did the unthinkable and went down the road. And I've got to say, I know it's childish, yeah. But I could never forgive him for that. I mean, prior to that, he was probably my all-time favourite Fulham striker. Maybe after Alan Clark, I was heartbroken. I was only about 9 or 10, but when Clarkey was sold to Leicester. But yeah, I had all the time in the world for Ivor, and still have. I kind of accept he's back and involved with the club. But for me, you don't go and, when you're an all-time top goal scorer for Fulham, you don't go and join them. But I know where you're coming from.
Well, once again, thank you. But for both of you, for the joy you bring to listeners and viewers around the world. I'm hoping to come over with my wife in a few months, and I'll get the chance to take you guys out for dinner and drinks, because the joy you bring to all of us as fans is so immeasurable. I know I speak for Russ here, so
absolutely,
you're an incredible, incredible individual.
Thank you very much, mate. It's a pleasure.
Okay, guys, just to finish up, we are recording this after the huge 6-0 victory for Fulham against Burton Albion. And Jim, I'll just ask you quickly, did you see this coming against Burton Albion? I certainly didn't. I predicted a 1-0 victory because I was concerned about how Nigel Clough would set up his team. So was this a surprise for you today?
Well, I could actually get away with saying this because Jamie sat next to me and he can bear witness to it. But I did say in the press room before the game, I thought it'd be 5 or 6-0. But I do get it wrong most weeks. But you know, sometimes when you just fancy it, and I did think that somebody was going to get a hiding here at the Cottage. We put 4 past Ipswich as well, you know, in the last home game in the league. And I just thought we were maybe catching them at the right time. And then when we heard Ben Turner was going to be missing one of the central defenders, I just thought maybe this was the afternoon. And I can honestly say, hand on heart, I did say about an hour before the game it'd be 5 or 6-0. So, but as I say, 25 years I've been getting it wrong. So I had to be right sooner or later.
Okay, fantastic. Very good. Jamie, to you, we were talking about earlier, we did our post-match show, that Giannis was talking about potential man of the matches. I'm curious, who was your man of the match? I talked a little bit about how well Ryan Fredericks played. There are so many players you can talk about, but we were really talking a great deal about Rui Font and the chant that we were hearing watching the match. So I want to get your man of the match here.
I think there were so many likely candidates, and Jim mentioned it during commentary, and I think he made a very valid point. The only one who really didn't make a sizable contribution was Marcus Bettinelli, and that shows just how good the team was outfield player-wise. You know, from the start of the game, it was very, very good. Burton pushed on to the back foot, and the goals that were scored and the type of goals, the way that players finished off those chances was very, very pleasing on the eye. Yeah, Rui Font scored 2 goals and he was very, very impressive. Lucas Piazon as well. I think those two have really got a developing partnership. You think back to Southampton and that was the first time that they played together. I know that they've had the opportunity to train together, but for me, I just think Rui perhaps needs somebody to play a little bit closer to him. He's that kind of individual. He's got excellent technical ability, nice little one-touch balls in and out of his body, and I think he's such a talented player. His finishing's always been there. Perhaps he's lacked a little bit of confidence. Today he scored those goals. The fans got right behind him. Lucas Piazon, lovely to see him score on his birthday. Tom looked good when he came off the bench. There were so many good performances from the players. I think it would be wrong to single out an individual. I think the team should all get the man of the match because it really was a team display, and I think the scoreline reflects that.
Absolutely. I'm glad that you put it that way, Jamie. Jim, before we go, I just want to mention this. If you could do this on future broadcasts, if you could just talk about a certain player, we'll say Tom Kearney, and say he's having a quiet game because then maybe he'll score two goals like Ryan Sessegnon.
Yeah, the curse of the commentator. Yeah, I knew it was coming, to be honest, and once I'd said it. But as I said, it wasn't meant, certainly not as a criticism, because the kid is a magnificent talent. But, and I wasn't suggesting for a minute he wasn't playing well, but... by his own standards, hadn't been that involved and was fairly quiet. But then he just sneaks into the box and scores two goals in 5 minutes. And, and what do I know?
All right, guys. Excellent. Thank you so much for joining Giannis and myself today.
No, pleasure. Thank you very much indeed. Ross, thanks very much for the opportunity. Cheers, fellas.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Giannis, we just talked to Gentleman Jim McGullion and Jamie Reid. What are your thoughts about this interview that we just had, my friend?
Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Just as I thought. I mean, down to earth, honest fans who give the honest, objective opinion, although occasionally subjective in the case of Gentleman Jim, but we love him anyway. I mean, we fired some questions at them and they were very, very honest. And we covered a wide range of topics as well, which I thought was great. And they were very, very transparent in their opinions. It was, honor to get to talk to them, and it was highly enjoyable. A lot of fun. It's the one thing that's sticking in the back of my mind, actually, Russ, was we were talking about players that Fulham heroes, and yep. And he said he hadn't quite forgiven Gordon Davis. I'd forgotten that he'd gone to Chelsea, and it's funny how that's 30 plus years ago.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't. And I did forgive him for that. I think the rivalry was a little different back then, but it is curious because if you look at Ivor's record for Fulham, it was just ridiculous. I think it was just the perception that would it have mattered if he'd gone to the Ha-Has or he'd got to Tottenham or Arsenal or Watford or, Millwall? But it was because he'd gone down the road to Chelsea. But nonetheless, I mean, the answers were excellent, and they're great, great people, and hopefully get the chance to meet them one day and have a few laughs. We've all got one thing in common, Russ. We're all passionate, no-nonsense Fulham supporters.
Absolutely.
And that's all that counts.
That's right, Giannis, and I really enjoyed that. I'm glad that you had the opportunity to join me and ask Jim and Jamie some questions. It was fun. It was actually, I didn't get a chance to say this to Jim. I thought about it after they dropped off, but for me, Gentleman Jim is Johnny Most. And anyone here in the Boston area knows who Johnny Most is. He was a legendary announcer for the Boston Celtics. And Gentleman Jim is on that level, and that's extremely high praise. So I can't thank them enough for joining us, Giannis. I really enjoyed it, but let's wrap this up. For our guest, Gentleman Jim McGullion, Jamie Reid, I'm Russ Goldman, and my co-host is Giannis Janaeus. Thank you so much for listening to Cottage Talk.